Welcome to the Shaping Portsmouth podcast. Shaping Portsmouth is a collaboration of key Portsmouth businesses, transforming Portsmouth together.
Welcome to another Shaping Portsmouth podcast with me, Dave Humphreys. And today I am joined by David Knight, CEO of the Royal Maritime Hotel. Welcome, David.
Thanks, Dave. Nice to see you again.
Royal Maritime Hotel, people might be familiar with it. They might be familiar with it under its previous name of Royal Maritime or Royal Sailors Home Club, I think it was, wasn't it?
At one point, yeah.
Yeah. I remember that. And down in Queen Street, a charitable trust.
CIO, yeah.
Very historic connection with the services in the city.
Yes.
But before we talk about that, which we'll come back to, let's find out a bit about you.
Okay.
So you're CEO there.
Yeah.
How long have you been CEO at the Royal Maritime?
Roughly 2.5 years now.
Okay. And what did you do before?
Immediately before this, I was self-employed as a consultant. Right. I did a few interim positions, like holding roles post-COVID. Got a bit bored of that. And the Royal Maritime came up, so I took that. I applied for that. But I've been in hotels roughly 28, 30 years now. Started out as a 14-year-old kitchen porter and then worked my way up to where I am now, I guess. Mainly Dorset, Hampshire, Wiltshire properties.
So you're not from Portsmouth?
No. I live in a small town called Verwood in East Dorset. Tiny little place, population of 15,000. Very quiet. We live right on the cusp of Moors Valley, so it's good, really good dog walking and cycling and things like that. So really nice place.
Yeah, bit of a commute to Portsmouth then.
Yeah, and I think it's been made super helpful with the amount of roadworks at the moment, because there are three sets now on the M27, so that's really good. But yeah, it's about an hour each way. If I'm doing an early duty manager shift, I can get in about 50 minutes, but normally it's about an hour, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You don't get tempted just to book yourself a room in the hotel.
I often do, yeah. It depends what shift. I don't normally work shifts, but if I'm doing a late shift and then an early shift, I might stay over. Yeah. Or if I'm attending an event, I'll probably stay over. Depends on what day it is the next day. I don't like waking up at work on a Saturday, for example.
But, understandable.
Yeah, these things have to happen sometimes.
So what took you into the hotel trade in the first place?
Well, I wanted independence from a fairly young age. And at 14, I got my first job as a kitchen porter. And I'll be honest with you, I wasn't loving school. It wasn't the environment for me at the time. I had things going on where independence meant more to me than school. Yeah. So when you get to work, if you're in certainly in hospitality, I can't speak for any other industry, but in hospitality, if you're good enough, you're old enough.
Yeah.
And you are based solely on what you provided, what you did. So you work hard and you get rewarded. You get extra shifts I got moved into the still room and then got moved into the restaurant. And then there was this German head chef called Peter, a big 6'2" Bavarian guy. And he just had this air about him and he made me want to be a chef. Mm. And then I went to college for about 3 months to learn to be a chef and hated it. So I stayed front of house where I felt a bit more comfortable. Just worked the way up from there. I just think it's it's one of the few remaining solely people-based industries.
Yeah, yeah.
Where everybody in employed at a hotel, with the exception of maybe 5 or 10 people, have a massive impact on people. And I like that. That's the part I really like. It sounds really cheesy, but you're not there for us. We're there to help people have great times and great memories, and I really like that.
Yeah, real service industry.
Yeah, it really is. And I think that not everyone likes it. I don't think a lot of people, I don't think enough people take it seriously as a career, but it's looked after me. Mm. It's had a pound of flesh out of me, no doubt, but it's looked after me. And it's one of those industries where you apply yourself, you will do well.
Yeah.
You might have to move around a bit, to get promoted and stuff like that. But if you're good, you're good. And you'll do well.
And you mentioned a sort of number of different areas you'd worked in. So that's obviously been a factor in your own career, that moving around for promotions. Yeah. And
yeah, I think, you know, when I was a restaurant supervisor, let's say, you know, you a job will come up, or you'll be approached or something like that from another employer to be a deputy restaurant manager, or then you'll be approached to be a restaurant manager. And the recruitment agencies around hospitality all know everybody. So you only need to meet one or two of them early on in your career and stay in touch. And then they will pick you for other roles and put you in front of people. It's quite rare, although not completely rare, to be in one place for too long as you're working your way up, because it is a very transient industry. So positions come up fairly frequently. The great thing about moving around is you pick up ideas from everybody.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of comfort as a CEO or a general manager to have people in post for ages, but they only have their own ideas or the ideas you give them, you know. So when you get people coming in from all types of establishments, a country house is going to be different from a city centre, and a seaside luxury hotel is going to be different from a country house. So you need people that have had a rounded kind of experience. Otherwise, it can get stagnant, and hospitality just doesn't stand still, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And then, so of course, then the Royal Maritime Hotel, the additional challenge of the fact that it's a charitable trust.
Yeah.
And that opens up a kind of a whole range of issues around fundraising and what you can actually spend money on, and charitable aims, and I'm guessing a board of trustees.
Yeah.
And all the things that go with that.
Yeah, it's got all of that good stuff.
Yeah.
The great thing about being a charitable incorporated organisation is we don't fund gold taps on owners' yachts.
Yeah.
We fund the benefit of veterans, all veterans, and merchant seamen. So there's that. So we're a hub for the veteran community. Mm. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, that's what we always want to be, but that's not all we are. Mm. So we are very lucky that we are a hub for veterans organisations, and we provide really great spaces, great refreshments for these people to have interactions and a base for reunions and things like that. And some of the stories that these people come out with are legendary.
And
they all, a lot of them involve the old home club or the 4 o'clock club, as it was known for a while. And so that is an element we really, really enjoy. Obviously, as a trustee, as a charity, we have a board of trustees, and I think we have 9 at the moment, all brilliant, all specialists. So we have finance, marketing, legal, charity, Royal Navy, buildings, a surveyor. So all have their specialisms, but they're super supportive. Mm. And the thing I like about the whole place is it gives all of the team a lot of autonomy. But at the end of the phone or at the end of an email, you've got an industry expert answering, you know, pretty industry specific questions. But yeah, the main charitable aims of the hotel are to provide places to meet, eat, sleep and drink for veterans, but everybody else too. So last year, we subsidised a record in 1 year, which was £200,000 worth of subsidies for veterans groups, which was a record for us. Doesn't sound like a lot, but you know, that comes straight out of profit, and takes exactly the same amount of money to service as a normal function or a normal meeting or a normal bed night. But everyone gets discounts and everyone gets free this and free things. We're also, if you're an armed forces member serving, you're instantly a member, which entitles you to the best rates available and discounts. A membership's about £25 a year. So there are different levels of membership, and you can come in as much as you want and get discounts and use the pool and the leisure facilities and things like that, which not a lot of people know about. There's a lot to it. So when we make profit or surplus as a charity, we have to decide whether we give it away or we reinvest it. So that's often, you know, full and frank discussions about what we do. My commercial head says, let's reinvest in this, and this.
Yeah.
My charitable head says, well, I think we could help these people here, and here. So it's really interesting, double-edged sword. But I think it's the best challenge I've had, but from a personal point of view.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
We'll come back to sort of the, some of the stuff you touched on there around things like the membership, the facilities that are at the hotel now.
Yeah.
But I kind of want to just rewind back in time a bit, actually. and you know, you referenced the 4 o'clock club there, which some people may have heard of, some people might not. But how old is the hotel itself?
It was originally built in 1856, the original club. It was built and funded by Prince Albert and the Admiralty because the sailors of the Royal Navy would return to port and get paid in cash, in a bag full of cash. And the great and the good of Pompey would then relieve these sailors of their hard-earned cash and they'd end up penniless and on the streets. So the Sailors' Home Club was born in 1856, opened by Prince Albert, frequently visited by Queen Victoria and Albert on their way to the Isle of Wight. And that stayed the same roughly for about, well, it stayed the same until it was aggressively remodeled by the Germans in the 40s. And it was reopened in the mid-50s, kept its same name as the Royal Sailors' Home Club. And then it turned into a hotel sometime late 80s. This is quite unclear about that in the records. But, it's been around for a long, long time. And for a long time, it was closed to the public. And a lot of single occupancy rooms and like lounges and a big kitchen and things like that. So we've got some really interesting photos from the 50s and some really interesting drawings from late 1800s. And the most fascinating guestbook, actually. Prince Albert, Queen Victoria, Queen Elizabeth, Prince Charles, Prince Edward, and amongst others. And it's got a fascinating history.
Yeah.
Everything from ghosts to parties to like royal visits and everything. It's got everything.
Okay. Yeah, well, you've got to have a ghost.
What's the point of having an old building if you haven't got a ghost?
Yeah. 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 Have you seen the ghost?
I personally haven't, but we did have ghost hunters at the hotel last January who were very keen to come back.
The like professional you see on the telly ghost hunters.
Yeah. They came in to visit, and they beat down our door to come and do more stuff. Yeah, it was really interesting. A lot of the staff went on the evening as well and loved it.
Right.
Yeah, loved it. It's very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So were they able to tell you anything about your ghost?
There were several ghosts, apparently.
Okay.
Yeah, there were several ghosts. One was...
Hence why they were so excited, clearly.
Well, yeah. The ballroom especially and the West Wing especially were I guess the most activity from their point of view. But,
marvellous.
I think every old building needs a ghost story.
Yeah, it's good. So, in more recent times then there's been the sort of rebranding. It's now Royal Maritime Hotel.
Yep.
I remember it being called Sailors Home Club.
Yep.
Has it had other names in recent times? Is that the?
I think that's the one that sticks with most. The 4 o'clock Club is a colloquial name given to it by veterans who served and frequented it from the base.
Right.
So it's called the 4 o'clock Club because it was the only bar in Portsmouth open at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And so, as you can imagine, it was wildly popular. When people finished their shift in the dockyard at 4 o'clock, it was straight over to the 4 o'clock
Club.
Instead of waiting until 6 or 6:30 for the pubs to open. So that's a really cool story. And a lot of the shenanigans from that are either closely guarded secrets or overtly expressed stories of debauchery. But... Yeah, it was some good drinking days, apparently.
I'm guessing you still have the odd patron that regales those stories to
you?
We do.
Yeah, we do. They're fascinating. The Royal Yachtsmen particularly, they were known very well. And people that were actually worked in the dockyard, not civilians, but not on ships, land-based. So they have a lot of stories about that. And it's fascinating to listen to them.
Yeah.
And as the evening progresses, the stories generally get freer.
Yes, yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
I can imagine. More oiled.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so we're now at the Royal Maritime Hotel, and that's probably quite significant, that name change, because it's no longer an exclusive veterans club, is it?
Correct. Yeah, no, it changed to open to the public sometime in the late 80s, early 90s, I think. The impact of like an institution changing its reason for being is, you know, it takes generations to change that sometimes. An example of that is we employed a head of department some time ago from a local hotel. And when they told their team they were coming here, all of her team were from local area. They said, oh, that's the private members club, isn't it? And so, yeah, that was only a few years ago.
Yeah.
So losing that kind of moniker is kind of difficult. And losing the historic reputation of the place is checkered. It had some good times there. People had good times there, and that's good fun. But moving it to its repositioning as a hotel and a half decent hotel, took some time. So moving it from where we were then to where we want to be in the next year or so is another step in its journey.
Yeah.
But we are definitely open to the public. We don't just do weddings and events. We have a restaurant, we have a bar, we have a function bar, we have a swimming pool, we have all sorts of leisure facilities like that. We even have Portsmouth's only skittle alley. Some exciting plans for the future as well. So it is an exciting time for the Royal Maritime. And it's interesting that the moniker has stayed so long. But we would recommend people do come in and give us a shout if they need anything, if they want to come in and have a look around, if they want to just come in and look at the historic library or stuff like that, then they're more than welcome to have a coffee while you're there, just come in, have a look. It's a really lovely place, very welcoming, although I would say that myself, but it is very welcoming. We have a great team. Some of them are old enough to remember the 4 o'clock club themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, some of the chefs are veterans and some of the waiters are veterans and things like that. So there's a lot to understand about it.
Because you mentioned memberships earlier.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm guessing, to the facilities such as the pool and the...
Yeah, we're kind of, yeah. You can become... There are different kinds of membership. So if you're a serving member of the Royal Military, you are automatically made a member.
Right.
So you get the best bedroom rates. You get 10% off your drinks and food. And that extends to your party and stuff like that. So we do get a lot of veterans coming in, a lot of serving military coming in. But you can also get associate membership. So you can just pay 25 quid a year. You can use the leisure facilities and you still get discount as well. Yep. So it's there's a lot going for the place. And we genuinely just want people to understand that, you know.
So the reality is an associate membership's probably going to pay for itself quite quickly if you're going to come in through the discounts.
It wouldn't be unheard of for that membership to pay itself back in a week.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and we do a great Sunday lunch as well.
I had heard that.
You have? Yeah. You probably heard that from me, didn't you?
Yeah. I did indeed. Yeah.
But like Sunday lunch is... two course carvery for $16.95, I think, which is really good value. We do three meats.
Yeah.
It's becoming really popular, actually. We pushed that a bit beginning of the year, and now we're doing 60 or 70 every Sunday, which is like starting from scratch. So that's going really well. And it's a nice, relaxed dining room, nice, relaxed service. But it is all table service as well, apart from the carvery, obviously.
Yeah.
But table service, drinks and things like that. So, you know, it's good levels of service at a really reasonable price.
And you do breakfast buffet in the mornings?
We do, yeah, we do. Yeah. Have you had breakfast with us yet, Dave?
I don't think I have, no.
Have you not?
No.
So all those times we meet at uni, we don't meet for breakfast first.
We should. We absolutely should. But we have been talking about doing one of our team breakfasts. So we must make that happen soon.
Yeah, definitely. But there is a buffet breakfast. I think it's $15.50 for continental and full breakfast. So including tea and coffee and toast and all that good stuff. But $15.50. It's one of the better breakfasts in Portsmouth. I would say that. But it's for the money, it's great value. Yeah.
Well, we'll come and verify that for you.
Yeah, well, it's all local meats, all local cheeses, local eggs. So we do a lot of work with our local providers, and the quality is great.
Yeah,
you know, it really is good.
And you mentioned as well that the restaurant, I'm guessing it's not just Sunday roast.
Restaurants
open at other times?
Yeah, it's open every evening.
Yeah.
We have an a la carte kind of bistro style menu. So you'll find things like soy salmon with couscous. You'll find probably the best burgers in Portsmouth. There's some good burger houses in Portsmouth, isn't there, to be fair? but great burgers.
I might have to verify.
Yeah. So, but there's great fish and chips. There's also great Asian-infused dishes as well. Okay. So there's something for everybody. There's steaks, and there's burgers, there's fish and chips. These Asian-infused dishes are my favourite. There's also a new bar menu where we do great open sandwiches.
Yeah.
My personal favourite is the BLT, where we serve very crispy smoked bacon with these just amazing confit tomatoes.
Right.
So they're just slow cooked in like flavoured oil for about 12 hours. It's delicious. I would recommend it to anybody.
Brilliant.
You came for lunch with us, didn't you, actually?
I came and had lunch with you.
That was pretty good lunch, actually, if I remember. Yeah.
Yes. With Katie from Unlock. And we actually had a blind serving off of your events menu.
Yeah, that's right.
Which was really good.
Yeah.
It was lovely.
It was really, really nice.
Yeah.
So the new bar menu is now available in the Compass area as well. So it's full table service as well in the bar.
To steal a line from Paul at the Queen's, he always likes to say, you don't have to sleep with us to eat with us.
Yeah,
and you're the same. So, public restaurant, people can book and come in.
Yeah. We're on Open Table. You can book via the website.
Yeah.
Bearing a few evenings, sometimes you don't normally. You could probably get away with coming in and just walking in. You might have to wait for a little bit, but the website books the tables as does Open Table. We take the taste card, so there's discounts available as well. But it's a nice, relaxed vibe in there.
Yeah. And what, 5 minutes walk from Gunwolf?
After
a day shopping?
Yeah, at the most.
Go and get your dinner, try somewhere different.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it has a bit of history.
Yeah. Views across to the old Navy base and things like that. So, it's a nice place. Mm. I would recommend anyone to it's within walking distance of most places in Portsmouth.
So, as well as all of that stuff, been a lot of refurbishment and work going on.
Yeah, there really has. So I talked earlier about the moniker of the local reputation, the 4 o'clock club and things like that. So just before COVID, the trustees invested £1 million in refurbishing, knocking rooms through. So we have no more single rooms. We have additional family rooms, all that have been replastered, recarpeted, new electrics, new everything. So there was £1 million refurbishment then. We're in discussions at the moment with the board, who've signed off another £500,000 refurbishment of the remaining rooms. So when I first got there was the West Wing, which had yet to been refurbished. And so there's 47 rooms there, and now we're down to 7 that need refurbishing. Right. So we're working on the corridors and other public areas, like below decks toilets and things like that. So, we aim to have that finished by about March. Then we're going to work with some marketing partners and things like that, which will hopefully attract more kind of North Americans coming in from the cruises and coming in for holidays and using us as a base.
Lots
of refurbishments taken place. And it really shows. I read somebody on LinkedIn the other day. They came to one of your military events held at the hotel. And they said the front, the inside belies the outside. So the outside is like a 1950s building that looks like a 1950s building. And it looks small, but it feels like it goes like half a mile back. There's so much.
It really is a TARDIS of a building.
Yeah.
You go inside and you think, hang on a minute, where's... Well, it didn't look this big from outside.
Yeah, I don't know where they put 90 bedrooms.
Yeah,
and they're all fairly substantial bedrooms as well.
Yeah.
It's We've got 90 bedrooms, 100 cover restaurant, 1, 2, 3 bars, 5 function rooms, a library, a swimming pool.
Mm.
Yeah, it's difficult to know where it all went, really. And we've still got more space that we want to develop further down the line. So in a few years, we'll look at developing that internal space.
Yeah. So lots going on there. And, you know, amazing building with really interesting history. The hotel is a Shaping Portsmouth member.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Why did you want to be part of Shaping Portsmouth as a sort of community, you know, one community organisation joining another?
Well, precisely that, to be fair. Like, I think the Royal Maritime in any guise has been an institution of Portsmouth for a long time. Getting to know its wider community is important to the hotel.
Mm.
We thought the best way to get to know, for other people to get to know us and to do more for the community is to get involved with you guys. I was quite, as a Portsmouth newbie, I was quite surprised that I haven't seen an organisation like yours in other places where, you know, I don't think I could remember as many names as you, but I think everybody in Portsmouth knows you. And I think that I think you guys are the best placed to introduce us more to the community and for us to do more for the community.
Mm.
So through you guys, it's got us involved in Neat Zero, which we're going to next week, and it's got us involved in more of the colleges.
Yeah.
And so we do a lot of work with City of Portsmouth College.
Yeah.
We did a lot of work with Hampshire and South Downs College. We do a lot of work with the university, and all of those contacts come through you guys, really.
Yeah.
And that just doesn't benefit us. It benefits, like, we do a lot of work with the colleges for free.
Mm.
So we'll host round tables
mm.
and we'll go to, we'll take students in and have discussions and all that sort of good stuff.
Yeah.
And we're doing some work with the Harbour School as well.
Right.
That's where I'm going to be doing a talk, and then the chefs, although they don't know it yet,
are
going to be doing a demonstration, and then we'll bring the students in for a look round and another demonstration. So we're doing that, but all of these guys came from conferences with you guys.
Yeah.
So the connections they've grown exponentially since we joined.
Yeah. And I suppose from the community side for you, there's the obvious one that your staff will be local.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from Portsmouth and members of the community, but you still got that link to the veterans community, and you've got other organisations such as Veterans Outreach Service who, well, they're based in the hotel, aren't they?
They are, and they have been, well, it's a fairly long time now. But that was a charity formed from the Falklands and now is headed up with Ian Millen, who's a retired commander. Naval commander. So they rent space from us at a vastly reduced rate. Almost, not a lot. And then we charge them almost nothing for room hire and refreshments and things like that. We also do a lot free for them as well.
Yep.
So the first Wednesday of every month, I'm sure Ian mentioned it on his podcast, but every first Wednesday of the month, there's a drop-in day. They take over the whole ground floor of the hotel. And that's all free. We supply coffee, tea, and biscuits for free. It's a really interesting and valuable symbiotic relationship.
Mm.
So, I mean, their guys are just so funny and adorable and welcoming and great people to have with the extended team. The relationship's outstanding. I think everyone that works there is full of integrity and care. And we really enjoy having them around. Like I said, the relationship is symbiotic. They get so much of a good deal. I don't think they could do half of what they did if they rented somewhere else.
Yeah.
So, long may that continue. We're very proud to be their partners.
Because of that veteran connection with you as a charity, it makes it ideal, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. I mean, although I'm not a veteran myself, my dad is a veteran. My stepbrother's a veteran, and you know, we lived. My early years was spent in the army, as an army brat, moving around Germany and Wiltshire and Dorset. So I get the I get the pressures that the veterans feel.
Yeah.
And I think what VOS do for the local veterans and for Portsmouth is outstanding. Knowing my dad as I do, you know, he was in Northern Ireland a lot in the late 60s, early 70s. And, you know, now he'd be a lot more looked after than he was then. Yeah. You know, there's no doubt he has PTSD. And he accepts that, so he won't mind me talking about it. But the work that they do these days is quite phenomenal. And like I said, with the veteran element from the hotel and from VOS, it's a perfect combination, really. And I think a lot more gets achieved through that symbiotic relationship than would normally.
Yeah. And then that connection to the services themselves still remains. So, I mean, we're recording this the day before the Trafalgar night dinner.
Yeah.
Obviously, this will go out after that has happened, but that's one of those connections that you still have with both the veteran community and the serving military community. So
it is.
What's that about? What's the? Because obviously I'm coming along. Yep. So what can I look forward to at the Trafalgar night?
Well, firstly, as this is going out after Trafalgar night, I can safely say that you and I behaved impeccably.
Yep.
as always.
Yes, I'm glad you've mentioned that. Yeah.
Yeah. But Trafalgar night is a fundamental celebration in the naval calendar of the defeat of the French and the Spanish by the British and Nelson at Trafalgar. So that was 1805, which our newly refurbished function bar is named after, which is attached to the Trafalgar Ballroom. So what to expect at Trafalgar night is from a hospitality point of view, there are the obvious drinks on reception, drinks on arrival. Then there's a four-course dinner and with cheese and port, wine with every course, and then cheese and port. And then there's rum for the toasts afterwards. From a fun point of view, there are sea shanties playing. We've got the Royal Marines Band, although an edited version of that coming for the drinks reception, which doesn't happen every day. And then we've got music and dancing afterwards. But there are also extremely well-informed and amusing naval historians and veterans making speeches, not just about Trafalgar, but about the Navy in general. Yeah. And that was it's a really interesting night, but it's full of laughter, tradition, and food and drink, really. It's a really fun night that marks a very special moment in the Navy's history. And I think that we do it really well. We do it every year. It's one of my favorite events of the year. It's a chance to get our finery on and mix with people that have lots of medals and lots of stories, but also a good time is had by all. It's not like one of those stuffy naval events where everyone's in there, you know, stood to attention all evening despite sitting down. It's actually a really fun evening. It's one of the best ones. I really enjoy that.
And I'm looking forward to it. So
I'm looking forward to having you, Dave.
It's going to be good.
Nice
night out. Clearly, you've had quite a career path through the hotel trade, lots of different roles. You're now running a charity. How does the challenge change there?
We have to have two hats for a start. So being a GM or without the charity element, my job title would undoubtedly be general manager.
Yeah.
But being the CEO of a charity means you have to have two hats, and you have to know an awful lot more than you do as a hotel GM, because you have to run a hotel, and it has to be profitable, it has to be safe, and it has to be compliant and all of that good stuff. Hotel GMs are pretty well versed in that. As a charity, with charitable objects and scrutiny from the Charities Commission, you have to know an awful lot more. So there are things you can and can't do.
Yeah.
There are things you should and should not do. And there are things you should and should do. You really should do. And so all of those things are pretty rigid. And all of those things are designed to keep end users as the main focus of what you do. And I kind of like that.
Yeah.
I like the framework, I like the support, and I like the guidance that the Charities Commission give you. I'm not saying they're the easiest people to work with at times, and they're by no means the quickest. However, they do a lot of great work, and they give us a lot of guidance and support sometimes. But we're very lucky with our trustees. Captain Paul Quinn he was responsible for the Naval Families Federation and other charities, and he's like the oracle.
Mm.
The man knows everything. And he's obviously a retired Royal Navy captain, and he knows everything about that as well. And he does it all with a smile on his face and a skip in his heels. You know, the man's incredible. Likewise, you have people like Mike Dorr, who's our chairman, who knows pretty much everything about everything, actually. He's also an oracle, but he knows about the Charities Commission. He knows about... There's always someone to help you, you know, is probably the point I'm trying to make. But he's both of those people and others are supremely knowledgeable. But for me personally, whilst it's been a steep learning curve, you can never know enough.
Yeah.
So it's always good to have them at the end of the phone. And, you know, things like submissions.
Hmm.
So if you submit something to the Charities Commission, we wanted to change our objects because it didn't include... Because the objects are hundreds of years old. So it didn't include the RAF, for example.
Right.
So we thought we should probably include them. That means we need to change our objects.
Yeah.
So that's a lengthy process.
Mm.
Despite it seemingly appear quite simple, of course you want to include the RAF. But that takes time and takes knowledge. The big challenge we had last year was changing from a simple registered charity to a charitable incorporated organisation. And I don't think I've learned quite as much about anything quite so quickly as I did during that process. And as a hotelier who's been told I like things done fairly quickly, that was an interesting process. I'm very glad that the board were there to support that.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine. Yeah. But... You know, as you mentioned, you know, it's you can never know everything, but self-development obviously still very important to you. Because we do have another little connection, don't we? Other than your membership of SHAPE in Portsmouth.
Yes, we do, Dave. Yeah, so we're classmates.
We are.
At Portsmouth Uni, currently doing a postgrad diploma with an MBA bolt on, and I don't mind telling you that it's quite stressful, but I have learned an awful lot. And it's really served me well, actually. I think firstly, the education has been first class from Portsmouth Uni. And I think the onboarding was an interesting challenge, but they got over it really quickly. And I think that the level of lecture is really good. I think the cohort is supremely supportive. I don't think I've met a more supportive bunch of people in my life, who all have families, all have jobs, and senior jobs as well, you know. And there's always someone on WhatsApp willing to guide you through something. It's been stressful, but the MBA, what we've done already, the first year, actually really helped me with a business proposal we're working on for the Royal Maritime with this marketing agreement and a membership agreement with a global company. So that helped us. Helped me write a business proposal to the bank. It helped me research the company, and it helped me put the proposal forward in a way that was like really professional and really well done, and made the proposal very difficult to say no to for a lot of people. So to say it's been worth its money already is an understatement. But I don't think I'm on my own when I say it's been challenging at times.
It's hard work.
It is hard work.
It's definitely hard work. And I think, you know, I definitely echo your sentiments around the cohort and the supportive nature. And I think half the value in it is just actually now having that group of people who are very similar around us. And, you know, just in case any of them are listening, I want to stress what a good bunch they all are. But I do actually feel that out of, you know, all the different people in the cohort, I think those of us that are CEOs probably have quite a distinct advantage. Because I don't know about you, but I've been able to really tie in what I've been doing in my day job to the modules we've been studying. Mm. And I think I kind of feel like I've got a bit more benefit out of that. And there's things like strategy where, you know, you always did it and you just didn't think about what you were doing, why you were doing, and the model in how you were doing it. Yeah. And suddenly having all of that, I found it really, really useful.
Yeah, I'd agree with all of that. And if the cohort aren't listening, we genuinely love the support. So thanks for that. But I think you're right. There's a lot of really, really clever people on this course.
Yeah.
A lot of them are specialists. And being a CEO gives you more than one hat to wear most days, and sometimes all at the same time. So I think going back to what you said about the strategic models, you'd have a gut feel about what you think you should do. But there's... When you've got to present it to somebody, you need models to say, this is how I thought of this. This is where we are. Yeah. Like, I used a lot of the strategic management models, Porter's Five Forces, the comparative business analysis, the return on investment. I used all of it. Strategic options. I used all of that in a recent board proposal. And without those models, without the deeper thinking, it could have proved quite difficult. Yeah. You know, I think we should do this. Well, great. Why? Yeah. Well, because I do. Yeah. It's not the answer when you're borrowing hundreds of thousands of pounds from the banks. You know, it takes a bit more than that. And I think the MBA's really been fruitful for that. But it's, you're right. I'm really glad. I like the fact that I wear different hats, different days, and sometimes all at once.
Yeah.
Because I like that kind of challenge. Whether that's because I've got a short attention span or not, I don't know. But I just genuinely like that. And I think it doesn't matter that you don't have a degree if you're doing this apprenticeship. It doesn't matter if you don't have great A levels or whatever. If you've had no formal education, that's fine as long as you're good at what you do and you'll learn.
Yeah.
For me, it's the most formal learning I've had since wherever. And it's kind of challenging for me personally, having not had a great formal education, that at level 7, you're kind of left to do a lot yourself.
Yeah.
And you go, I don't know what to do. And that's when the cohort really comes in.
Yeah.
Because a lot of those guys are really clever.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I say guys and girls as a general thing, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, as you've already acknowledged as well, you know, fair play to the university, because there's an enormous amount of support we can access through that as well. So
yeah, fair play to them.
It is good. So, brings us nicely to the end of our podcast, and we always finish with a little look at the city and asking our guests to make a recommendation or a tip of somewhere to go, something to do. And obviously, I'm not going to let you recommend going to university.
Or the Royal Maritime Hotel.
Or the Royal Maritime, actually, yeah. Well, we've not put a rule around that, but yeah, let's just take that as read.
Yeah.
So... what would be your recommendation?
Can I do two?
You can.
So uni doesn't start till 10 on every second Thursday. So sometimes in the morning, I'll use that time between like 8:30 and 10 to have like FaceTime off-site with some people or people I want to meet, but I've got to cram it into a day you know, when I'm busy. So I generally go to the Hideout Cafe for a great cup of coffee and superb donuts. And they've just had their downstairs refurbished, which is well worth a view.
Yeah.
Tiny little place, pretty young. The music's pretty young, certainly for me, but they do a great cup of coffee and the service is really nice. They have a big communal table which I find really nice and relaxed, and it breaks down barriers and things like that. If you want a decent cup of coffee, go there. The second place I want to recommend is Guildhall Village. Again, it's quite a young place, but they do an amazing array of beers. I think they did, at the last count I went there, because I don't drink alcohol, I think they did 7 non-alcoholic beers. And they make a great coffee, and the food's pretty good too. And I've often gone there after university to meet people and things like that. I don't go there at night, so I can't guarantee what it's like. But when I go there, it's normally pretty quiet, and it is quite a chilled vibe. So I'd recommend those two.
Yeah, definitely good shouts. Those the Hideout, the donuts, absolutely yeah,
they're world class, aren't they?
They are incredible, and not that I'm all about the food, but the Guildhall Village do incredible dirty fries.
Yeah, they do.
So I'm with you with both of those recommendations. Yeah. Definitely. Probably don't use either enough for off-site meetings, actually.
Yeah, it was quite close to you as well.
I tend to end up in Starbucks, which is only opposite across the road from the Guildhall Village. So maybe I should.
It's a good cup of coffee, both of them, actually. Mm. Although in Guildhall Village, I normally have a Guinness Zero. But there are 7 non-alcoholic beers there. It's incredible. Right. Great choice.
That's worth knowing. So, yeah, interesting. Cool. Right, brilliant recommendations. And, of course, recommendations around the breakfast buffet, the evening restaurant, the Sunday roasts, or just a drink in the bar at the Royal Maritime if you're local to Portsmouth. And if you're not and you're listening to this and you want a little weekend away, why not come and stay?
Absolutely. We're a friendly bunch. We'd love to see you.
Brilliant.
Cheers, Dave.
Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
And we'll look forward to tomorrow night's Trafalgar Night celebrations.
Yeah, I'll see you there.
Thanks.
Cheers, Dave.
This podcast was brought to you by Shaping Portsmouth, working to make Portsmouth the number one UK city in which to invest, live, learn, work and visit. To find out more, please visit shapingportsmouth.co.uk. This podcast was supported by Spark Community Space and Portsmouth Community Lottery.